I now call the meeting back to order. Just a minute, cold outside. Temperature's dropped. Yeah.
My apologies. Mr. Handy, if you could please come up.
Just for the record, Mr. Handy has been sworn in.
Oh, he has been?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Randall Handy. From Seaford, Delaware. I operate two companies, Handy Realty and Handy Properties. Real estate is a brokerage company, and the Handy Properties is a property management company. And I also am a general certified appraiser. I've been in the real estate business, or was licensed in 1971, which is 42 years ago. And it's a little hard for me to believe until I look in a mirror. But I've been a licensed appraiser since 1990. As general certified, so. And I've been retained by the Sea Pines Village Association to comment on the impact, potential impact of this proposed tower on values of the nearby properties.
Now, Mr. Handy, you testified in the previous case and took a look at the properties and performed a study, is that correct?
Yes.
And then you, again, have gone back and performed a further study just now. Is that correct?
Updated study, I did something that I had not done the first time, which was go through and look at each individual unit in the complex, all 46 units, and do an analysis of all the sales that have occurred back since 1998. Which is forward back as our records go. And there have been 10 sales in the subdivision that are the ones I pulled out as being germane to this discussion. And in the package that I have distributed to you, we've talked about those 10 sales. And as far as I was concerned, the only, other than doing an appraisal on each individual property, the only way to analyze this in a reasonable fashion is to look at the relationship between the final sales prices and the listed prices. Now, that's not a total scientific analysis, but it is a good way of determining what's going on. And so, as you'll notice, the sale number one, or the sale number one had a 10% reduction. Number two was 33 and a third. Number two was 33 and a third. Number three was 19.8, down to 12.7 on the next one.
Mr. Handy, could I just stop you? And you're talking
sure.
About Exhibit 27, your report?
Right.
And what page are you on? You're on page 16.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on page 6.
Page 6.
Page 6.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Just for the benefit of the board.
Oh, okay. And then to continue on, the 12.7 was for sale number 4. And 16.7, the sale number 6, I could not determine that because there was no listed price. Then it was 9.3%. The largest one was sale number 8, which was 54.4. Sale price was 1.6 on number 9, and 14.9 on the last one. There had been reference to a technique that appraisers use called match pairs, which is essentially a way of comparing two properties. And theoretically, under the best conditions, it would be in a subdivision, for example, where the houses were essentially identical or nearly identical. And then you had one variable that you were trying to determine the impact that might have on values. So they don't have to be exactly identical, but you have to then adjust the variables so that you would make them theoretically comparable. And then you can determine if there was a change in value, then that was attributable to that one particular aspect that you're trying to determine. So the matched pair analysis was not, I did not do it, and I, as far as I can tell, none of the appraisers who testified so far did an actual matched pair, even though they referred to it. In my analysis, I'm trying to come up with a range of what I think the impact on values would be, and particularly as it relates to, as the curve that I saw on page 8, on a relationship between the impact on values and the distance from the tower. And again, this was an approximation on my part, but I believe it to be fairly accurate. So that would give you an idea of the impact as up to 500 feet away.
And in your report, you talk about a couple different ways to analyze this: cost, market or sales comparison, and income approaches. And market or comparable sales approach is the most reliable. Is that the case? Or
yeah, for residential properties, it's almost exclusively being used.
Okay. And you mentioned that match pairs couldn't be used, and that's because there aren't match pairs existing. Is that?
Well, no. It's just that the analysis has to be much more in depth. You would have had to done an appraisal, full appraisal for $500 on each property, which would have been $20,000 to $30,000. Somebody would have to spend it, which nobody was going to do that. So you have to use another, more economical way of looking at it.
And looking at the properties, what is your general sense of what is going on here with the presence of the cell tower based upon the temporary tower being in 2010?
Right. The final result of what I had done was it pointed to a range of reduction in value from 10% up to as much as 30%. And regardless of how scientific you try to make the analysis, in a final analysis, this whole thing boils down to common sense. You know, all of us, or most of us, I think, own property. If we owned a unit in this subdivision, you know, it would be reasonable to assume that you would not want that tower anywhere near your unit. And that's going to affect not only potential buyers and their attitude, you know, and that's one thing, but the fact that you have had buyers who have bought these properties under a certain set of zoning regulations and conditions, and then you now come and are potentially going to change the game, that's not fair. It's just blatantly unfair. If you're doing like we were talking about earlier, you had a variance on setbacks or side yards or something like that, something minor, that would be one thing. But this is not minor, it's a major. And so that it has a much different impact on the value.
In your professional opinion, as far as any numbers or effect, is there any effect you see that you can quantify?
My attempt to do that was in the 15 to 30% range. It's not possible to put a definitive number exactly, because it will depend on each individual unit, its proximity to the tower, how it's viewed from that unit. These units have both front and back balconies, and so sometimes the tower would be very obvious from the front or probably from the back. Just depends on its orientation to the site.
And looking at your list of sales, and I notice a number of properties in which, for example, there's in your report red numbers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, on page 16 is a reproduction of the analysis or the work I had done on the sales analysis for all the units. Sale number 4, for example, if you're able to look at that, was something of an anomaly because it was a sheriff sale. And so the $250,000, which was the final sales price to a third-party buyer, the 444 just above it, was an artificial number that was between the bank and Fannie Mae when they went through the foreclosure. But so the $250,000 figure is what the unit finally brought. And if you'll look at my analysis of the distance, it was 165 feet approximately from the proposed tower. In talking to the buyer of that property, he said that the proposed cell tower definitely had an impact on his decision as to how much they'll offer for the property.
And now, Unit 9, that's the unit most close to the cell tower location. Is that correct?
Yeah. Right.
Could you talk a little bit about that unit and what you have in that chart?
This would be Unit 9.
Yeah.
Its final sales price in April of 2013, this past April, was $217,500, as opposed to when they purchased it in 2004 of $405,000. So that's $133,000, $500 loss. That's a pretty significant drop in value.
And that's more significant than just down markets.
Right, that'd be a lot more than the effects of the most recent housing fluctuations would do.
Any other units of interest?
Yeah, excuse me. The other one was Unit 19. Again, it showed a final sales price of this year of $312,500. Going back a second, the most prior to the housing bubble and to the cell tower location in this development, the sales prices were ranging from 95%, 98%, in most cases, some cases 100% of the listed price. In other words, they were such high demand units because of the location, they would almost immediately sell and very, very close to the listed price. In this case, it sold substantially less. It's sometimes very difficult for an appraiser to try to determine what the reason for that is without a much more in-depth analysis. You know, I don't know the motivation of the buyer and seller, and you need to know that to pinpoint it a little bit more directly.
But in your opinion, do you feel as if the cell tower has and the proposed tower being larger and taller, will that have effect on properties, and to what effect would that have?
Oh, it'll obviously have a negative effect, and in my best estimate, in that range of 10 to 30%. And if you think about it just a minute, like I said in my original report and as well as this one, I'm going back to what I consider the reasonable man theory is an offshoot of English common law. That you, what would, in a case of law and trying to decide a situation, what would the reasonable man do in that case? And it's pretty hard to believe that a reasonable, well-informed individual is not going to look upon the cell tower as having a negative impact, not only on a purchase, but also on, to a lesser extent, on a rental value. So
with all that being said, I understand your presentation there, consulting report and everything that you put together, which is very good. But in the bottom line, will substantially, in your opinion, affect adversely the uses of the adjacent and neighboring properties? In your opinion, do you feel that that's
all
covered?
Absolutely.
And do you
based on your testimony.
Any other questions from the board?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Vicki York?
Mr. Chairman, the hour is late, and as the opposition has initially went through his exhibits, there's a lot more material to cover. And personally, I believe that in order for us to give them the best attentions, our best attentions would be it would be prudent at this point to adjourn the hearing and reconvene again perhaps next Monday night, 7 o'clock here in the council chambers.
Mr.
Mr. Mills, I believe that there's a lot of people here who taken significant time and expense to be here. Whether traveling long distance, and this is just my two cents.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns I would have is that if we were to adjourn and then open, that you know, we're leaving the public record open, which, you know, in theory could open up a whole lot more issues for this board to consider as well.
So you would suggest we go until 2 in the morning and not be clear enough in our heads to make a good decision and give them good consideration with their testimony?
Well, I think at this point the opposition and the applicant would have an opportunity to make presentations to us, and there's ample opportunity if the board so desired to consider it, you know, make a decision on a different evening and an opportunity to kind of inventory and review the record.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I only have two not too long witnesses, and then the public would be coming. If that would help, just to give you an idea of what we have, a couple witnesses. So if that might help us conclude,
I don't know. Do the rest of you feel that way or what? I mean, yeah, we've had hearings last until 1, 2 in the morning.
We got a rebuttal yet, too. I mean, afterwards, right?
I believe the applicant should be afforded that opportunity.
I think he should have the opportunity too.
Yeah.
And they should. I mean, and they have an opportunity to come back too. It seemed like for him.
We really have made a lot of people have come out, so we would really appreciate if you would give us the opportunity. The applicant took a lot of time, and people came from distances, travel. It would be a hardship on them.
I'm only suggesting that, you know, we're human, and you know. It's late. You know, we all work during the day, and I'm only suggesting that we may not be giving you our full attentions. But I mean, both the applicant and yourself have had close to 2 hours each now. How much?
Could we perhaps at least set a time period?
Yeah.
If they come that distance, I think we should give them the time to them. I have no problem. I mean, we've been later, so.
We'll intend to be very brief.
I'm in favor of giving more time.
See, I being 81 years old, I tell them that as you get later, you get duller. So we want to give you the best that we've got on both sides. So where that number is, I don't know, but that's up to Mr. Chairman. But I believe that we should give you the opportunity to at least jog this up here for us.
Maybe you should put a coffee bar out in the lobby.
Yeah, right.
I mean, John. I mean, we've been here that long. I think and they've come from a distance too.
Yeah,
I have no problem.
People have come from a long time.
Keep on going, but it's up to the rest of the board, though.
I do note that the applicant's attorney is standing, so I don't know if he has if he wanted to chime in at all either. But
I was polling the board. I got to see what Mr. Hudson, how he feels.
Does everybody have to go to work tomorrow morning?
Through with the attorney.
I don't.
What do you have to say, sir?
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of AT&T, we're happy to do whatever the board feels is best. Obviously, we want to make the best decision
that's right.
Make. Might I suggest, since I'm standing, lawyers always like to talk, that maybe one way to solve the traveling slash distance problem is perhaps to Mr. Burton have those folks who have traveled here and perhaps can't make it next week speak tonight, but then once those people have spoken, we would recess and come back next Monday or Tuesday or whatever day suits the board. Just an idea. I mean, we could get take care of those travel concerns and then still make sure that
but you're going to offer rebuttal, then do they get their rebuttal, though?
Well, under the rules of the board, we get rebuttal, and that's the end. I mean,
they don't
the burden's on us. So we made our presentation, they talk, we get a rebuttal, and then you all make your decision.
That's fine.
So I'm happy to do it however you like.
We really have traveled long distances and availability, people out of country, things like that, to be here. We would beg for your opportunity to have our voice heard, and we'll be as brief as possible.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my suggestion was to their benefit if they want to continue.
Okay. Do you want to continue?
Okay. Yes, please. Thank you, sir.
We're losing a little time now.
Sorry. Vicki York, please.
They're done with my
question. Yes, they're done with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
And just for the record, Mr. Chairman, Ms. York has been sworn in as well.
No.
I promise I'll be short and brief and to the point. My name is Vicki York. I'm a realtor in the Bethany Beach, Fenwick area. I have been down here since 1995. I have my own company and have been very fortunate in real estate sales. So what I did is I took a schematic of Sea Pines Village, and there have been five sales since. Do you want a copy?
Yes, please. You can start now with Mr. Lang,
okay.
Please.
Five sales since 2013, and what I did is I mapped them out in the community so that you could see clearly where the values are, and I marked where the tower is. So if you turn it this way, you'll see that there's Jefferson Bridge Road. You're going to go into Lagoon Road or Drive. And if you look straight ahead, there's a little circle by the pond. That's the ATT Tower. And the first cell that is marked is unit number 3. The list price was $290, and it sold for $288 this year. The one number 9 was listed at $289, and it sold for $272. And those were the two transactions were the closest proximity to the tower. Then you're going to proceed to number 12. It was listed at $350 and it sold for $312. So that when you get a little bit farther from the tower, the value seems to be improving. Then you move out to Pennsylvania Avenue. Unit number 19 was listed at $338 and sold for $312.5. And then the last one was number 43. That was listed at $381 and sold for $375. So when you look at how they're mapped out on the sales, you can obviously see the tower has an impact on the value. And then this morning I went out and I took a picture on page 2 that as you're entering into Lagoon Drive, you can see how the units, their decks, are facing the tower. So if you're out there in this summer night having a drink or something, the tower is going to be your focal point of sitting on the deck. And then I also attached all the sales, giving you the breakdown of when the sales occurred, the list price, and the actual selling price.
You feel that the tower has reduced the prices and not the
I think
economy?
It's quite obvious when you look at the sales that occurred on Lagoon Drive. When I testified in 2011, I really didn't have the documentation because the real estate market was in the middle of a recession. But with having five sales since the beginning of the year, I think the numbers kind of speak for itself.
It doesn't. You don't think this has anything to do with the recession?
No, we're coming out of the recession.
Up, are we?
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Last year I had 43 transactions. This year we are close to 80. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So you feel depreciation is tower related and that the market is going in the other direction, is that?
Well, if I was driving a prospect into the community and we were entering in on Lagoon Road, and when you're driving into that parking area, the first thing you see is the tower. And most of the time, my clients who I work with are not interested in seeing a tower or high tension wires. So they're going to ask to see something else. Chances are they're not even going to get out of the car to look at the unit.
And just for the record, could you, I don't know if you stated this because of the time purposes when we were hearing, but you're a realtor in the Bethany area, that's correct?
Yes, I've been here for 18 years.
And about how many sales over the last, whatever, 15 or 20 years or have you handled?
Probably $300 million.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And you've sold units or represented by sellers or represented buyers in Sea Pines before. So
I have, but not in the last couple of years. But I continue to show them. So
but you're very familiar with the
very
property.
Familiar. Okay. And there's only one balcony.
There. Thank you very much.
I have a question. I'm not sure I understand on your. You said on
my little schematic.
The two
I'm
top,
sorry, it's so informal.
The two top piers are the closest to the tower. Correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Are you saying that the difference in the asking price or the list price and the sale price, percentage wise, is greater there than these two down here?
Well, I'm just saying that the list prices are substantially lower than where 43 is.
What you're testifying then is that your list price on those two properties started lower
because of the tower, right? Mm-hmm.
However,
because it's almost about a 30% difference.
However, the difference in the actual sale price to the list price is a greater percentage on these down here than
maybe
the
because
two.
Of the price a little bit, I don't know, but I'm saying the list price is really kind of the dictating factor.
Okay.
Were these units all in the same condition and
that I would know. They're all the same floor plan usually. There's two bedrooms, one and a half baths. Sometimes sellers have modified by adding a second bath, but they're all they're spiral staircases, wood burning fireplaces. You're very limited on what you can do on the inside unless it would be cosmetic and location.
So there is a lot of variables in all these.
I'm sorry, sir?
There are a lot of variables in all these lists.
I think the bottom line is location, to be honest with you. I mean, there might be a slight variance with, like, some upgrades, like maybe hardwood floors or granite or stainless steel, but for the most part, it's in real estate, it's location, location, location. That's what it's all about.
It has nothing to do with updates and upgrades.
It has a small factor involved, I would think. But somebody can also say, well, I'm getting a great value, and I can invest $20,000 and bring it up to the standard that I want it to be.
Ms. York, one last question, if I may. You mentioned that all the floor plans are the same. We've heard a lot of talk about match pairs. Doesn't this provide, in essence, the best sort of matching of properties just
need to be, I don't know what that means.
Okay.
So.
But my point in simple terms is that these units are all very similar, same exact
they are.
Floor plan.
I would not compare Sea Pines Village to Sea Colony or Bethany proper townhouses or some of the other surrounding communities that are near here because they're different. This is, you know, this time in 2013, we have five sales, valid sales. Whereas when I was here in 2011, I don't think there were any sales that we could really actually use a comparison or say that the tower had a negative impact on the value. I think the numbers here speak for itself.
Ms. York, what have you factored in at all the impact of the convenience store located on the site as well?
No. I wouldn't, no. I think it's just, you know, the Sour Tower is a recent addition in the last 3 years, and the market has come up in the last 3 years. I mean, we've certainly had activity.
Comparing to other homes in the area,
mm-hmm.
Would you say that the list-to-sale price ratio is greater for Sea Pines Village and the homes adjacent to this property related to other homes in the Bethany area?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer because it depends on location, the seller's motivation, the condition of the unit, that sort of thing. And it's hard to factor that into the list price.
Have you looked at all into that in the Bethany area? Or
I sell in the Bethany area. That's my primary focus. So, like, I can have a listing over in Bethany proper, which is, like, basically across the street, and it depends on if it's an interior unit or a larger unit or a smaller unit, the location, you know.
So would you say a short sale in one of these would be?
There was a short sale. That was number 9.
That's correct, and that's the one that would that have any? That's the one of the ones you said might.
And that's
have
the closest to
it.
The tower.
That's correct. So.
So when you're sitting on your deck, the tower is very prominent there.
But would you agree that a short sale would have something to do with that?
You know, it's interesting. You know, dealing with short sales, I work with those very closely. And sometimes it'll have a negative impact on the community, and sometimes it doesn't have an impact at all. You know, like if it had had such a big impact, then why did number 43 sell for $375, which is almost $100,000 more?
Well, it was also listed at
Well, it's also a better location, too.
More.
I'm sorry?
It was also listed at $100,000 mm-hmm. more also.
Mm-hmm.
So, the bottom line you're saying is that tower...
I think it has a negative impact on the property,
impact
up to 20-30% off the list price.
Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
Ma'am, who sets the list price?
Sellers.
They
call me and they want to have a discussion about what is the market value. Show me the comps. What and then we have a discussion on what the list price should be. And it, like I said, it depends on the location, the condition, and the seller's motivation.
So all these
and sometimes sellers are a little unrealistic.
So all these homes are the same, though, right?
Basic same floor plan, small kitchen, step-down living room with burning fireplace, spiral staircase to the second floor, 2 bedrooms, bath and half. You can modify it and add a second bath up there.
But
the same deck, patio, it's hard to modify them.
Not like 43 is closer to the ocean.
It is a little closer,
but
correct.
You're gonna pay a little bit
but
more.
You can't see the tower from there either.
No. Now, is that the same tower that... temporary tower, is that the one you took the picture of?
Yes, I took that this morning.
Okay, that's the temporary tower.
That is the temporary tower.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the first thing you see when you drive into the lagoon.
When you made these sales, did they...
Oh, I didn't make the sales.
Oh,
I wish
okay.
I had.
All right, well, fine. Did they mention anything? Was there any conversation about the buyer saying... Oh,
I did not have a chance to reach out to the selling agents that made those sales. I just, it looks like I sold them, but because I just printed it out of the multiple
So you
lessons.
Don't know that answer, no.
You know, I'd be more than happy to reach out to them and get more information if you like.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Greg Cox here. Greg's just going to testify on his own, and then I think Lou Kilmer is going to speak, but then it's just the public. So,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cox has been sworn in as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for your...
You're welcome, sir.
Good evening. I'm Greg Cox. My wife and I are both realtors with RE/MAX Realty Group in Rehoboth. I've been realtors there now for a little over 8 years. And speaking first objectively, or subjectively, we were the purchasers of that unit number 4 that was in foreclosure that went for $250,000. And how I first became associated with Sea Pines was I had a client, or a woman call me out of the blue, who had rented in Sea Pines and saw that there was a property in there for sale and asked me to come down and show it to her. So I did. The property was a little over her price range. So at some point I saw this unit number 4 come on the market for what to me seemed like it was a little below the market pricing for this property. And that schematic, by the way, is not the scale. It's just something I threw together on a spreadsheet just to give you an idea of the proximity of the units to each other. But anyway, when I saw this property come on the market, I thought, well, maybe this is more in her price range. I called her. So I went down to show her the property. We went into the unit, went out on the balcony, which is now my balcony. And as soon as she saw that cell tower there, that was it. That was the end of the showing. It's not for me.
Well, according to this, it was unit number 3. Is that
no, 4. No, that's not mine. Oh, no, mine was four. That was the foreclosure, which we purchased back in...
So it's not one of these, that Mrs. York?
No, we bought ours in 2010.
Okay.
But anyway, I saw the price keep coming down on that unit number four, and to me it just seemed like an incredible value because the person that bought it before paid $435,000 for it. So I kept watching. I tried to get a hold of this client. She went off the air on me. I never was able to find her. But then I saw it go into foreclosure, and they decided to put an online auction on it. They lowered the price to $279,000, and I thought, you know, this is unbelievable. I got to figure out a way to buy this property. So I found a partner, and he and I put in what we thought was a, you know, what we call a lowball offer online for $250,000, and we ended up being the high bidder for this property. Now, the cell tower was there when we bought the property, but we had been told by the listing agent that it had been in litigation, that the owners had won the suit, and that the tower was going to be coming down. Unfortunately, we didn't look into it any deeper than that, and I don't know if we would have decided not to buy it, or if we would have felt that the risk reward was low enough that we could live with the cell tower. I probably would not have purchased it if I knew 3 years later I was still going to be shelling out money for legal fees and, you know, fighting this case. But bottom line is we bought below the market, and the cell tower was there. So, you know, we're not complaining, but many of our neighbors didn't buy below the market. And I think I can clear up some of these questions about the relationship of the tower in this piece that I handed out here. What I did, because actually listing price and sales price is really very relative, because many times when you see what the price of the property sold for, that listing price has come down 2, 3, 4 times by the time it finally sells. So if you look at the listing price of what it was when it went under contract, it could be very close, but it could have started much, much further apart. And in many cases, that's what's happened. But what I did is I wanted to see what the direct impact the cell tower may have had on our community. So I took the properties that sold on Laguna, which is where the units 1 through 8 and 9 through 15 are, okay, because those are the ones that are most directly impacted by this cell tower. So if you look over to the right, I have it going back to 2003, and I took the average selling price of the properties that sold on Laguna versus the average selling price of the other properties in the community that sold. So in 2003, 2 units on Laguna sold that year for $339,750 average. Only one, what I'm calling an other unit, sold that same year for $349,900. So that was about a 2.9% difference between Laguna and the other. To go to 2004, it's much more compelling because there were more properties sold. There were 4 properties sold on Laguna. They averaged $396,475 selling price. Okay? Of the 2 properties that sold on the other group, it was an average of $400,000. So it was less than a 1% difference between what the properties on Laguna sold for versus what the properties in the other parts of the community sold for. Virtually the same price. So when you ask about the gas station and the, you know, the fast food, those were all there then. And you can see that those units were selling on par with each other at that time. Okay? So then the recession hit, and there was very, very few sales. But I lumped 2009 and 2010 together, because only one property in each section sold during that year. There was a 26% disparity in the selling price of those 2 units. the Laguna unit selling a 26% discount to the other. You move into 2011 and 2012, the disparity moved to 26.8% between the property that sold on Laguna and the property that sold in the other. Now, if you move to 2013, this year, okay, things have gotten better, but they haven't gotten as much better for Laguna as they have for the other group. We are still selling on Laguna at an 18.2% discount to the rest of the community, keeping in mind that back in 03-04, we were selling at parity. So then I took of the 22 sales since 2003, I took the drop in price from the trough, peak to trough, okay? So that took into account the recession, and now the increase. So at the very bottom of the recession, the Laguna prices were down 43% from peak to trough. In the other group, they only went down 29%. So these are based on real numbers. These are the actual sales on the left side of this chart. And I've highlighted the high and the low sales at each of the Laguna and the other sales. So this is hard data. This is not whatever the term was that the appraisers are using. This is our community. And this is exactly what has sold and the exact prices they sold for. Never mind what they listed for. It really doesn't matter what they listed for. It's what they sold for. Does anybody have any questions about that?
No. No, sir.
So, and just to address the rental situation very briefly, we've been very fortunate to have been able to rent our property for the 3 years that we've owned it, the 3 summers we've rented. We totally redid the unit. We gutted it and, put new granite, and we did all the stuff to it. We had a very low cost basis, so we fixed it up nicely. We've got a nice visual tour of the property. And most of the rentals these days come in online, and they look at the tours and the visual tours, and that's what they base their decision to rent a property for. But the interesting thing is that in the last 3 summers, while we've been fully rented, we have never had a repeat tenant in those 3 years. Not a single repeat tenant. And that strikes me odd. Almost as though when they get there, they decide that they don't want to come back for some reason. And I have a feeling I know what that reason is, or due in part to, is that cell tower.
Do you tell them that there's a cell tower there?
I do not. I don't talk to them. It goes through a rental agency, and like I said, they see it online, they see the pictures, and it's a beautiful unit. It's a block and a half, 2 blocks off the beach. We get the rentals. But we don't get the repeats. Every summer, it's a whole new cast of characters. And that's unusual. Most of the time when you rent beach property, you get repeat clients. And eventually, that's what you build your whole book on, is repeat clients. So
your testimony is also that it will substantially affect
it. Absolutely, in my opinion, based on these numbers, which I think are very clear.
Rentals, right?
Rentals and the numbers as far as the sales. I just have one other quick piece. I was at a continuing education class last week. We have to take a certain number of hours every year for continuing education. And the class happened to be on legislative issues, and this particular class was on disclosures specifically. And I don't know if you have it in I know you have it, but whether you find it or not, this is a page out of a seller's disclosure of real property condition. This is something every seller has to fill out when you put your house up on the market for sale. It talks about roof leaks, history of the house, all of this kind of stuff. Number 29, the question is there anything else you would disclose to a prospective buyer because it may materially and adversely affect the property? E.g., zoning changes, road changes, proposed utility changes, threat of condemnation, noise, bright lights, odors, or other nuisances, etc. So I asked the, I raised my hand in the course, and I asked the real estate attorney, a very respected real estate attorney out of Dover. I said, just theoretically, if I knew that someone was putting in a 100-foot cell tower next to my condominium that was the view right off of my balcony and from my master bedroom, and at that time didn't know they had moved it back, but it was within the drop zone of this cell tower, would that be something I would have to put on this disclosure? And the attorney immediately said, absolutely. I would absolutely have to go on this disclosure. Well, any realtor will tell you that when you answer yes to that question and you have to go then to the back and explain what it is, that is a kiss of death. You're admitting that there is another negative factor that, you know, they need to know before they make a purchase decision.
And that's real estate law?
That is Delaware real estate law. Question number 29 on the seller's disclosure. Now, if it wasn't a material issue, I mean, again, using common sense, I mean, if you had the choice, and the other thing about real estate is that when the market's good and the inventory is low, people are less discriminating on what they purchase. Okay? There's only one unit left in Sea Pines Village, and it's my unit looking out at the cell tower. There's nothing else available. They're more inclined to waive that concern unless there's something across the street that may be just as good that doesn't have the cell tower. But if there's lots of inventory like there is now, you're either going to not get selected or you're going to have to drop your price to a very low listing price to get someone to make that concession, and that's a fact.
How far does a cell tower affect sales? Say, it's right there in your block, right? That's where it's right behind your
Right out of my bedroom window.
Bedroom window, okay. A block over. How does that affect that sale? Or two blocks over, cell tower is going to be there.
Well, I guess if I could sit on the edge of my end of my bed and look out my sliding glass window and not see it, and it was a couple blocks down the street, it would probably have little or no effect on it. But if I'm sitting on my bed and I look out my window and at night I can look out and see the red light, and whether it is safe or it isn't safe, the perception that a lot of people have is that they're absorbing some kind of radiation from that tower. I mean, and they don't have the benefit of an expert witness to sit there and tell them that they're not. So, again, common sense would dictate that, you know, definitely would have an effect. But if it's out of sight, then I'd say it's out of mind.
Never out of sight, though. Somebody's got it somewhere.
Yep.
Okay.
Question?
All right, sir.
I spent 25 years on a board of adjustment, so I'm going to be very brief. I understand it totally. My name is Lou Kilmer. I'm a member of town council, but I'm here as a private citizen. But for the benefit of a little bit of an explanation about why the AT&T's antennas are not on our water tower, let me just give you one piece of information. After the first hearing, which I attended every hearing, after the first hearing, when the cell tower was granted to AT&T, the town council reached out to AT&T to try to be a good neighbor to our neighbors at Sea Pine Village, maybe at least to talk about this. The representative who we contacted, this is through our town manager, said very nicely, we got our tower and you can keep your stinking water tower. And stinking wasn't the word that was used. So we always start out with a very negative tone as far as why that tower, why those antennas aren't on our water tower. But why are all of us back one more time before the Board of Adjustment regarding the AT&T application for a cell tower? It is a fact that the board has previously reviewed, studied, and issued their unanimous decision denying the applicant's request. Nothing new has been presented this evening that should cause the board not to come up to the same conclusion. In my opinion, this is a modern-day case of David versus Goliath, with the board being asked to assume the role of David. Why are we really here? We are here because of one simple fact. The Delaware Supreme Court hearing regarding this application, which I, along with my colleagues, attended, the Supremes focused on one word, and one word was substantial. In the board's written opinion, the word and the concept of the meaning of the word substantial was missing and was not properly addressed. So I'm asking the members of the Board of Adjustment to again unanimously deny the application for the AT cell tower, but this time in your written opinion, focus on the following. The cell tower has a substantial negative impact on the community of Sea Pines Village. There is nothing positive about the proposed location of the AT&T cell tower. The cell tower will always substantially have a negative impact on the property values of Sea Pines Village and surrounding residential properties. The cell tower has and will have a substantial negative impact on the safety and well-being of the Sea Pine Village's residents, as well as the community overall, and the cell tower is and will present a substantial negative impact regarding the aesthetics of the community. And finally, AT&T has failed in a very substantial way of thoroughly vetting all the alternative sites and technologies that could have explored, while at the same time also ignoring the repeated orders by the county to take down their temporary tower. Final thought. Why hasn't Verizon and other cell vendors come to you for a not a variance, for a I'm having a mental block right now.
Special use.
Why aren't there? Is it, where's the hardship? Where's the hardship? Thank you,
Mr. Kilmer. First off, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kilmer has been sworn in for the record.
Okay. Thank you.
You indicated you're a member of the Bethany Town Council?
Yes.
And I want to make sure I've got this right, because this was a key point in both the Superior Court decision and the Supreme Court decision. Is the town willing to engage with AT&T about putting a tower on the Bethany Beach water tower?
Not at this time.
Okay. So that is not an available option.
I am only one person. I can only speak for myself.
But, I mean, as far as the town goes, it's not an available option at this time.
That's correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we're clear, because that was a bit of some conjecture at the last hearing. So.
Or has the town told AT&T that they're not interested?
Yes, we have.
Thank you.
Great.
So they've been told.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, lady and gentlemen, and thank you for taking the time to stay up late. I know I have to go to work tomorrow, and I know sometimes people tend to drone on. I do that myself. Sometimes I even put myself to sleep when I'm talking. But I'll try to. I've submitted via Dave. I submitted this package to you guys. It's the one with the nice picture on the front.
Oh yeah.
And I will walk through it. I was going to read it when it was 4 o'clock this afternoon, but being as it's late, I'm just going to hit the highlights. And just so you know, I'm not only a resident at Sea Pines Village, but I have a background that qualifies me to talk about some of the information that's in this paper. I have a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and a master's degree in system engineering from Johns Hopkins University. My career up until a couple of years ago was working for the U.S. government, where I was a technical director for the Missile Defense Agency, which was a follow-on agency to Strategic Defense Initiative. So I understand about line of sight for radio frequency and where you can sight them and what the hazards are to people. At one point, put a radar in northern Japan that is to look over North Korea, and that required speaking to people, the local residents and such. And all of the Japanese government agencies that were interested, their equivalent of the FAA, the FCC, all of their departments of defense equivalent. So anyway, I've been through this, and just one little other note on my experience. I was the deputy system engineer for Customs and Border Protection for their secure border initiative, which was an effort to put surveillance towers along the border of the United States, particularly in the Southwest. Those towers relied on radio frequency communications and radars, among other sensors, on those towers. And so we had to really consider propagation and stuff you guys have heard all about tonight. And I just have one little note in here about that that hopefully we'll put it in English for y'all a little bit.
Excuse me, before you get going, could you just state your name for the record?
Sure. I'm Greg Miller.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Miller has been sworn in. I just wanted to make sure we had that in the transcript.
Thank you. Had I been awake, I'd have remembered that part. So anyway, I'm myself and my lovely wife, we're the people that bought unit number 9. And we bought that this spring, mostly because of the location. When we went to look at it, we did see the temporary tower there, and we did ask about it, and I guess our broker got out of line number 29 because they told us that the tower had been, the special use exception had been denied and that it would be going away, but oh, there were some appeals going on, but don't worry about that. It's been denied. It should go away. So we foolishly maybe believed them. So anyway, if we want to just walk through these pages, on page 1, the one with the nice picture, I just talk about the fact that, okay, they moved it 107 feet from our unit. It's 63 feet from the other units that you guys heard about were approved on the other property, so they're definitely in danger. In the unlikely event that it happens to fall our way, it does miss me by 7 feet, but a flaming tower coming at me might make me a little nervous. Okay, so then I cite the chapter 115 article. You know, the applicant shall submit to the board documentation showing that existing structures within a 2-mile radius of the proposed location are not suitable for co-location. Any applicant for a new commercial communications tower or antenna or monopole shall include documentation substantiating the need. I'm just going to hit a couple of the highlights here. I think it's insulting to the board and everybody here that AT&T believes a simple map with a circle on it and a statement that nothing in this circle is suitable for co-location is sad. I've never done my job that way. I would insist on seeing some genuine options and a detailed analysis of those. And then just skipping ahead a little bit, this was another, this one that's behind the written part. This picture is out of their AT&T's application. And I tried to count up the little little X's in here that were complaints, and we've heard a lot about the complaints tonight. And I really couldn't tell you anything about those X's other than there's not very many of them. I counted about 40 of them, and I wasn't sure if that was over the last year or the last 10 years or since AT&T has been in business. And it really, I heard a little bit of conjecture tonight about, well, 911 phone calls. But I don't think it's about that. So the other picture that I have back here is an example of a similar situation that AT&T faced in a place called the Barron Park, which is somewhere near Palo Alto, California. So I was doing some research, and I found that the wording to the left of the photograph is from the Barron Park Association newsletter, where they talk about how AT&T swooped in and installed these antennas on their power poles. If you look at the picture, you can see an antenna that's been mounted on the top of the power pole. And there's some power boxes that are kind of hard to see down there, but I presume that's the data processing equipment, and they most likely have a battery backup power for that. And just because I have looked at radiation hazards, and I know that there was some concern expressed about this giant sphere of hazardous zone, I think I read on one of these pole-like antennas that the hazard zone for that, if it's active, is about a meter. So it's not going to be in the neighbor's bedroom and stuff. And the reason that the power would be lower is because this is a distributed system that has many antennas, but they're closer to one another, so that the signal doesn't have to travel a mile or whatever. So you can get away with a little less power using a distributed system. And that goes for the data as well. And I also don't believe, even based on the gap in the coverage that they showed earlier, I don't believe that they've established that they need the tower. I think I have an inkling that they want the tower for their business model. Here's the AT&T coverage map that I looked up on my way out here. It shows the area of interest in this bright orange color, and it's labeled best. It does show some area up here that's labeled good. So for what that's worth, on the one side, AT&T says we have great coverage, and then there's a few people here from AT&T that say, oh, the coverage is terrible here. We need this tower. So why might they want the tower? Oh, sorry, I skipped over this part. This is an AT&T press release from 2009 that says, AT&T answers the need for speed in Delaware, and they talk about they're going to expand the scope, capacity, and speed of its network for data handling. There's no mention of any reliability issues with their network, and there's no mention of safety issues, as in people haven't been able to dial 911, so we need to have a better network. So I believe, and I would venture to guess many people believe, but the reason they want this tower is to increase their data capacity, not their phone calls. Now, why would they want to increase their data capacity? Well, here's AT&T's route sheet or rate sheet that I pulled off of the web November 17th at 8:10 a.m. If you have a data plan that includes 40 gigabytes, well, that's $30 a month. If you have a data plan that covers 50 gigabytes, that's $335 a month. Now, they're not going to get many people to sign up for that if they have to wait, 15 seconds for a download of a menu at one of the local restaurants versus 5 seconds. So they want the capacity to have a fast network. That's my belief. And their business model is such that, heck, we can put that in there with one tower. Not a bunch of single sites on power poles. I only have one tower to install and one tower to maintain. Well, speaking of maintenance, going back to the dropped calls or these problem areas, there was no discussion of was their equipment all operating? Was the network good? Was it degraded because of some maintenance at the time or some failure? I don't know. So anyway, another thing was that they talked about using a 25-meter resolution data, which I don't see how you can really look at that and get a good idea of what the propagation path is. I took this picture out of their presentation, which is also in your packet, and it shows that what they're trying to show is if we put a 100-foot tower up here, and we're picking a house, maybe at random, here at the corner of Route 26 in Atlantic, which is right downtown Bethany Beach. Well, the reason we like that is because this is up here, and it travels a shorter distance through this area that's called tree clutter. And granted, tree clutter reduces the signal-to-noise ratio, so you want to minimize the path through there. If they had a 60-foot tower, it would be in the clutter all the way, and your signal rate would go down. So if you recall the map that I showed with the X's on it for where their problems were, and if you recall, well, don't recall that just yet. Let me talk about a couple of other things. So I took this chart, and I said, okay, I'm going to go check this out. So I got these photographs. These were from Atlantic Avenue and the intersection of 26. This one is looking south along Atlantic Avenue towards where the proposed tower site is. And by golly, this one here is looking north along Atlantic Avenue. And to be honest with you, I don't see a lot of trees sticking up in that photograph. So I don't know how they get this tree clutter up at 70 feet. Maybe it's because they use 25-meter resolution data. And if there's something there, it's like, it's got to be big. The other interesting thing on these photographs is all of these existing utility poles where AT&T reportedly doesn't already have an antenna on those poles. But I just showed you a picture where they did, in fact, install antennas on those poles. Anyway, these poles are above the clutter that's caused by the buildings. Each of these buildings is a structure that could be available for an antenna if they wanted to put one there. People say, I don't like the antenna messing up my roof. Well, if you look at antennas on the web, you can see antennas that are camouflaged to match buildings or behind an extension on the roof. It's just not that hard to make them less intrusive. So I took some other looks. This one, I apologize, in your packet there's a typo on it because I'm an engineer. So this is another intersection looking along Pennsylvania Avenue where the power pole, where they either do or don't have an existing antenna, the power poles run right up Pennsylvania Avenue, and they're taller than the power poles in a lot of cases. And you can see in this photograph, there's a tall tower in the background and a shorter one in the foreground. Well, these taller ones run right up Pennsylvania Avenue right through town. And there's no reason that one would think you couldn't put three or four antennas on those to achieve the effect of closing the reported dire need for coverage in downtown Bethany Beach. And just another photograph showing the same thing, no tree clutter, lots of power poles, lots of buildings where you could put stuff. And then interestingly, I was looking, just kind of walking around town and looking, and I saw this other tower, which is a lattice-type tower located directly behind the Bethany Beach Volunteer Fire Station. I guess it's the fire company. So anyway, there's an existing structure I haven't heard anybody talking about. I've heard people talk about water towers and monopoles, but there's a nice lattice tower there. It's not quite 100 feet tall. It's probably closer to 50, but it would certainly provide you good coverage in downtown Bethany, I think, based on those other photographs. That tower is clearly taller than the buildings. This is just a little map that shows the areas that where they were showing the dropouts are right down in here. This just illustrates the route of the power lines where they could put antennas on the poles. It goes right through the heart of that. But again, the distributed system costs more and it costs more to maintain and install. And finally, I would really like you to read what I wrote because I do make additional points in there about safety. I know that RF is doubtful in many people's minds. But here's the big thing for me personally and why I think it would substantially damage my property. We heard a little bit about value. We heard a little bit about uses. And I use my property. I go out and I sit on my deck. I like to have a glass of wine with with my wife, and the sun goes down right there, so it's right over the trees, and it's really nice. And what we do when we go out there is we put these potted plants out that come up about as high as the railing, so when we're sitting down, we are not seeing the gas station and the fast food joint. What we see over this way, and we usually sit sideways, so it's like right there is the detention pond is right down here, and that's quite a little ecosystem of birds and frogs, and I even saw a guy catch a fish out of there one time. So anyway, speaking of quality of life, I drew this picture here, which is kind of interesting. It's actually as close to scale as I could get it in Microsoft PowerPoint. This is a representation of a tower with three carriers on it. And when I'm sitting on my deck, that would be my eyeball. It's about 85 feet from the top of the tower because my deck is maybe 15 feet off the ground. So the human eye, when you're looking straight ahead at the horizon, you have about a 60-degree up field of view. So that's the top line here. When you do the math, I figure, okay, they're back 107 feet now, I guess. Okay, so I said, all right, that's about 115 feet. So when I'm sitting on my deck, if you do the math, it's a 36-degree angle to the top of the tower and about a 25-degree angle to the bottom of the what I call the visual clutter or visual pollution. And so if you look at that 36 degrees, taking into consideration the 60-degree field of view, that's about 60% of what's in my face. So if you hold your hand out about 2 feet in front of you, it's kind of like that. So anyway, please read the document. I think I made some good points in there about how we feel about it and presented some data that calls into question the need versus the want for the tower. And that, I don't think I'm going to keep you any longer unless you have a question.
Anybody have any questions?
No. What was your unit again, 9?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Barb Girk, and I'm the president of the Sea Pines Homeowners Association.
I think you need to be sworn in. Can you state your name and address for the record?
Barb Girk, 33298 Laguna Drive, Bethany Beach, Delaware.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
I have these binders for you. I was going to go through it a little more detailed, but I know you'll appreciate if I don't. But I'd like to go through it quickly and just point out some things and maybe you could look at this later on and in more detail. And she's going to have some slides up here. Simply, you know, I am the president of the Homeowners Association, and this is a compilation of facts for you to weigh and consider as a group. I'm also a resident, and my husband and I have retired to Sea Pines Village. And if the tower is to be approved, we won't stay there. I can be honest with you. Rather than risk our health, our safety, and our lives, we will move. No person should ever go through what we went through this past 4 years. And we just hope that you will look at this our honest presentation, and we're just asking for justice and adherence to the law. So, and the first part, it's just a little bit about, we'll skip to some of it. There is no gap in coverage, and this is a business move for AT&T and the property owner. There's only 1,064 people in Bethany Beach, you know, really, and most of the time they're part-time residents. Greg already talked to you about the coverage. This is the coverage that they're saying that they have the best. And if you notice, best is the strongest signals. You can keep going. going, and the same with the data. This actually explains the cell signals too. Now, this is an unbiased report, and I pulled up AT&T. There are no dead zones. Next one. This explains reception. And just recently, AT&T is said to seek the sale of, this is a Bloomberg report on September 17th, and this is that AT&T said to seek the sale of cell towers valued at $5 billion. Actually, a sale would bolster AT&T's balance sheet as it undertakes a $14 billion network upgrade. The tower industry is consolidating, with fewer companies controlling bigger swaths of equipment needed to transmit wireless. So this is actually, you know, when home office says do something, you do it right away. So the next one is annual sales. AT&T has about 10,000 towers, which generate $326 million in annual revenues. And the other companies will pay to lease the facilities. So this is going to generate a lot of cash for them. Same thing here. It explains the rollouts, intense profit move, whatever makes the money. We go on there. There it is again. I mean, it's a big thing. Now we came to a crossroads. Here's a tower down the street. In 2009, it's been there since 2009 that we noticed it's 0.38 tenths of a mile, actually. And 2011, AT&T argued in front of the Board of Adjustment they weren't able to put anything on a utility pole. September of 2013, according to Bloomberg, AT&T announced this big move to sell the towers. And then immediately after home office corporate decision, all the towers were identified and marked in preparation for the company-wide profit move. I believe that, you know, a week before the Board of Adjustment hearing, all the identification stickers will cut off. I don't know. So moving on, the next one is the board minutes to the minutes to the meeting. At that time, Pam Scott, the attorney, said that they looked at 33 different sites, just like they said again today. It's crucial to find the best location. We've already gone over the utility poles and everything, or used the one that they have there. And then they also discussed about how the towers are designed to withstand 120-mile-an-hour winds. You know, they just had typhoons with 235-mile-an-hour winds, and you know how things flood and it blows. I mean, we've been here when it's 80, 90 miles an hour, so that's nothing. You get a hurricane, you know, that's not dependable, and we've seen them fall before in the videos that we've sent out. Now, here's a picture of the tower. This is when this one was first noticed in 2009. I don't know how long I was there. And there's and AT&T is also on Sussex Shore. There's a picture there with they're already located there, which is just down the street. So if you could just look at that, I know I don't want to go into great detail, but just take a look at some of those articles, and they do explain all the cell signals and why sometimes you don't get a strong cell signal if you're in a room or a building with steel girders and or heavy cement. Sometimes you can have a real strong cell signal, but you won't get it if you're like in D.C. If you're in the metro train, you wouldn't get a signal. I mean, Verizon has it, but AT&T didn't, you know, do anything there. In the buildings, I had AT&T at the time when I was there, and I was two blocks from the White House, couldn't make a call, couldn't receive a call. No one with AT&T did. So the other people had Verizon or other, and they would get them, but we didn't. It all depends, you know. So, and there's a lot more people in D.C. than here. Okay. All right, these are dangers. This is actually what I wanted to show you. This is the sign that's posted at the gas station there. And this is 32,000 gallons of gas on that sign. And that is close to that. It's on our fence. It's nailed to our fence. That's the fence, the Sea Pines Village fence. So that's nailed to the fence. The next picture are the underground storage tanks. And you can see the tower, the temporary tower in the background. That's how close it is. This is our fence. That's how close the deliveries are for the propane and all that, too. All right, there's a lot of machinery. There's a lot of movement and activity around there. That's the temporary tower in the back, and that's facing towards the back. So you can see these pictures in here. And there's another site. All right, next one. All right, here's in the back of the gas station, or the Arby's. That's a tank, and there's a smoking tank next to that. I have a smoking thing. There's a grease truck there running, and there's a grease vat from the restaurant, and that's filled there. So there's a lot of dangerous things there with the cell tower, too. This is the utility pole there with, this is the electrical wires near the propane tank and everything. And they're just, it does have the crane there. They do maintenance there all the time, so they do go up there and do maintenance. This is actually what, this is the tower on 26, and this is what the bottom is going to look like. This is not what we have now. This is what the bottom is going to look like. And those things over the wires, I didn't know what those were, but actually those are, it's called an ice bridge. It's for the ice falling off the top so it doesn't break off the wires. But you can see in between, if people are walking there, nothing's protecting them. And, you know, that the site here has a drive-through. These are hydrogen cell sites, and I have some articles in there. Each of the backup batteries, they'll either be lithium batteries or hydrogen cells, and they're stored for to back up in case there's a breakdown of communication.
We've been told it would be a diesel generator.
Pardon me?
It was stated that it would be a diesel generator. It wouldn't be any batteries backup.
Well, AT&T has a lot. There are other sites.
Pardon me? Three sheds then?
With three sheds, because if you have another carrier, some of them don't. Some of them have hydrogen tanks. Some of them have lithium batteries. Maybe AT&T will have this. But you're not sure what the other carriers will have. You know what I mean? So, I do have articles to back this up, too.
In other words, if they have co-location.
You don't know what the other carrier is going to do. Right. Yeah, and there are some articles in here, too. This is
the, unit in the 26.
Sir, you need to be sworn in if you're going to speak.
Can I get sworn in?
No.
No? Okay.
It's okay. This is the parking lot in the back. You can see the fence where the tower is. That's how it floods from the pond too. This is the flooding. These are just pictures of the flooding, and that's from the back end there. Over here.
Did that flooding come from the tower?
It came from the right behind the tower there.
That tower caused the flooding.
I don't know if the tower caused the flooding, but we weren't getting as much flooding before, but now we flood all the time.
Because of the rain that we had in it this year.
Mm-hmm. So, but it goes into the parking lot. Before it used to be drier, though. It there wasn't as much grass, but you can see how wet it is there.
Unusual rain for this year.
Here, to show you how dangerous it is, you know, there could be fires or anything. There's a delivery truck. There's a worker there standing there over the pipe going into the tanks underground, and he's talking on his cell phone. There we have banner planes flying over and coming back. Now, this is a return flight, but we have them really low. So this is the shore tower. All right. And then what if something happens that it's abandoned? Because abandoned gas tanks are really a serious problem. It's abandoned, and then we've got a tower there on a site that's not being taken care of. This is what I would like you to look at if you when you have time. This is really important. This is about the backup batteries. And telecommunication providers rely on the backup power to maintain constant power. And it's usually a fuel cell. And what they do, and I'm trying to skip through so I can get through, but they, especially in an area where they need a lot of, we have hurricanes or anything like that, you need more power. So normally, they just need a few hours, but here you would have to have up to 72 hours of power to back it up. The batteries, and for some of them, the batteries, backup power, are lead-acid batteries, and they're continually changing with the grid power and provide stored electricity. And if you turn to the next page, there's a diagram of what it has there. There's a propane tank generator, hydrogen storage cabinet. The fuel cell installations are typically fueled by a six-pack of compressed hydrogen storage containers. These containers each hold either 139 square cubic feet or 261 square cubic feet of hydrogen pressure at 2,400 pounds per square inch at a weight of 137 pounds. They have the combined capacity to fuel a fuel cell for 24 to 96 hours. So you can see they have them on the site. Now, this is interesting. When the hydrogen fuel cell supply in the fuel cell is low, a self-checking alarm remotely alerts the operator to replenish the storage containers. The operator can resupply the fuel cell via hot swapping or bumping. In a hot swap resupply, operators deliver pre-filled hydrogen storage containers to the site and swap them individually with depleted containers without disrupting the backup operations. Bump resupply involves refilling the storage containers at the site. A hydrogen tanker delivers hydrogen gas and replenishes the existing storage supply. That's a lot of dangerous things. So, also, the next article is about lead-acid batteries. It's either one or all of these. A battery is more than chemistry. The battery has far-reaching implications due to its electrical and electrochemical characteristics. The documents will address what we believe to be this. So this article explains it. There's a large data center or telephone central office may contain over 10,000 gallons of sulfuric acid. The sulfuric acid is the strongest when the battery is fully charged and may be as high as 40% pure sulfuric acid mixes. And so to go on, the sulfuric acid is classified as an extremely hazardous substance, and lead dioxide and lead sulfate are classified as hazardous materials. So in the planes, the 787 fleet that was grounded, that was thermal failure. You know, sometimes these things, and it goes on to say that a actual battery application, they explain a regular car battery, but telecommunications typically have battery strings of 12 to 24 cells each. The type of destruction of battery cells is typically what's called a battery fire. Substantial clouds of acid, mist, and vapor may be present during this type of fire and will typically overwhelm a typical ventilation system. Normal operations during life of the battery is, you know, it's exposure, but hydrogen gas from either the battery can be released to levels. So at the end of the article, they explain, we have grave concerns regarding a facility that has substantial amount of batteries outside of motor vehicles that have not been reported to the local emergency planning committee or the local fire department. So, you know, how well-trained are the Bethany Beach fire? They're well-trained, but how well-trained are they in fighting a cell fire? I mean, do they...
Let's leave that to them.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. How about
okay.
that?
There is training online, too. That's, you know, and I know that they have to cut off they have to actually cut off the power before they enter the
fire. They know what they're doing, yeah.
Okay. The reason why I brought this up was because it appeared before the Montgomery County Board of Appeals. There's a case study there, and they actually, several community members expressed concern about the possible risks from these batteries, which, like car batteries, they contain the sulfuric acid. So a county official responsible for the registration of hazardous material storage sites testified that the risk associated with lead-acid batteries increases with the number of batteries. There's more about there. Here's cell sites with it. And then if you go on, there's this is a tour of from an AT&T. And then later in here, this is the electronic hold, and this is lightning. Just go through that. All right. And the dangers of it. And there's
Why don't you wrap up?
Okay.
Just say the sections.
Right.
There's section 3, right. Section 4.
I do have a letter here. All right. There's a couple sections, and I'm sorry to keep going. There's a letter here that from a, it's regarding the pacemaker. One of the women wrote about her dad. Have you received that letter? Or can I read it? She asked it to be read.
Mr. Chairman, before she does, I mean, it's been 3 hours. I really need to take a break.
Okay. You need to take a break? All right.
Okay.